which sends and receives telegrams by literally taking a picture of them. Transmission is possible up to 9 miles. The quality diminishes over longer distances because of the limitations of telephone lines. Chapter 31. Christina. Dr. O seemed tense at the office. Daisy was sweeping up more figurines than usual. Christina kept count of them. One day there were 5 dwarves left on the shelf, and the next, only 3. A few days later, Daisy took her aside. He can't decide whether to take the offer to open a practice in Las Vegas or not. His friends are building a modern medical dental center, and they're begging him to come. If he does, I'm willing to go with him. What about you, Christina? Would you consider starting a new life after graduation?
You mean move to Las Vegas?
If he decides to go.
I don't know. Jack would have to want to go, too.
You should tell him there will be great jobs for an electrician out there. Think of all the hotels they're building.
But it's so far away.
It is far away. I can't deny that.
My parents...
I know. It's hard to leave family behind.
They'd never agree to let me go.
But you'd have plenty of vacation time to come home and visit. And you could make it a 2-year commitment, like going away to college. Except instead of paying, you get paid. You'd make good money, too.
But I wouldn't know anyone.
You'd know me. And Dr. O. And you and Jack would make new friends.
Jack is 1A. He could get called up at any time.
Let's hope that ridiculous war ends before then.
Daisy, can I tell you something? You'd have to keep it to yourself. I mean it. No one can know. But if I don't tell someone, I'm going to explode.
You can trust me, Christina.
I know I can. Daisy waited for more.
Christina finally bit the bullet and blurted out,
Jack and I are secretly married. We eloped to Elkton. Daisy came out from behind her desk.
Oh, Christina.
She put her arms around her.
I hope you'll be very happy. Then, you didn't have to get married, did you?
Christina laughed. No, and that doctor you sent me to, he fitted me for a diaphragm, so I won't have to worry.
When are you going to tell your parents?
I haven't figured that out yet.
Well, don't say anything about Las Vegas yet. First, Dr. O has to make up his mind. But I have a feeling he's going to do it. And I admit I'm kind of excited about going. I'm starting to feel like a pioneer.
A pioneer, Christina thought. The Wild West.
She'd have to learn to ride a horse, she supposed.
The idea of it made her giddy.
Daisy.
Christina and Jack were married. She knew Christina had something on her mind, but a secret marriage had never occurred to her. She should have guessed. Hadn't she done the same at Christina's age, running off with Gerald Dupree, nay, Dorfman, to Elkton? Gerald Dupree. What a name. And Daisy Dupree, even better. A fabulous name, she'd thought at the time. A name fit for a stripper, or even better, a movie star, which made her laugh. The only good thing that had come out of her hasty young marriage, annulled 2 weeks after they'd eloped. But that was a lifetime ago. Jerry had been older, 25 to her 18. He'd been working for 10 years by then, for the Stasio boys, number runners, then bootleggers. It was 1936. Times were hard. She was a year out of Linden High School, where she'd won every award in the business program for typing, steno, bookkeeping. She was lucky to find a job working as a secretary for an insurance agent in Newark. She wasn't his numero uno, as he called his longtime secretary, but he liked Daisy, admired her for her organizational skills. With her first paycheck, she went for an eye exam, got prescription glasses, and the difference in the way she could see felt like a miracle. Tall, with perfect skin and thick, dark hair cut short, a good body, excellent posture, Daisy could have passed for 25. Her older sister, Evelyn, had taught her a thing or two about using makeup, about flirting. She'd met Gerald Dupree at a lunch counter where they'd both ordered split pea soup. When their checks came, he put down the 15 cents to pay for hers. She married him on a whim, 2 months later. She knew what to expect on her wedding night, but nothing beyond that. In a motel outside Elkton, Jerry became frustrated with her.
"What's going on down there?"
he'd asked. "How should I know?" she'd answered.
"I can't get in."
"I told you, I'm a virgin."
"I've had my share of virgins, baby, but this is something else."
He sent her to a doctor who broke the news. She would never be able to have children, would never have normal sexual relations. She understood about not being able to have children, but what did she know about normal? What did she know about sexual relations? She didn't ask questions, and the doctor didn't offer explanations. When she told Jerry she would not be able to have children, he seemed more angry than disappointed. He didn't hold her or kiss her or say he loved her anyway.
"Did he tell you why you couldn't have children?"
he asked. "Something about missing female body parts."
"Jesus! Body parts? What body parts? You mean you're a freak? I married a freak? Did you know? You must have known."
"I didn't know."
"How could you not have known? You tricked me into marrying you."
"How did I trick you?"
"You gave me the come on from day one. You were such a sex pot. Did you think I wouldn't find out? What did you think would happen when... Oh, Christ, never mind. We'll get it annulled."
"What's annulled?"
"It means since the marriage was never consummated."
"What's consummated?"
"We never had sex. Do you know what that means?"
She wasn't an idiot. She just didn't understand what was happening.
"So now we go back to the way it was before we went to Elkton," he told her. "We go back to our lives before we met."
"Can I keep your name?" This made him laugh.
"Dupree? You want to be Daisy Dupree?"
"Yes."
"Fuck Daisy. How are you going to explain that to your family?"
"That's my business."
"Be my guest."
After that, she'd reinvented herself. She'd learned to throw back a scotch, to straddle a chair, smoke a pack of Camels a day, and laugh at off-color jokes. She even told a few herself. When her brother-in-law, Mel, said,
"You've turned into a real broad, Daisy,"
she'd said,
"Good for me."
She became strong, even tough, if she had to be, a woman who made friends with men, but who never let it get romantic. She was done with all that, with girlish dreams of houses with picket fences and little children calling her mommy. She was a female in every way but one. So she was missing some of her lady parts. So what? The doctor had referred to her as juvenile down there. Well, that was the only part of her that was juvenile. She'd never have to worry about why she wasn't getting pregnant the way her sister Evelyn did. Maybe Evelyn was missing lady parts, too. She hadn't told Evelyn or anyone else about her condition. She lived with Evelyn and Mel in the small house she and Evelyn had inherited from their father. When Mel was killed driving home one rainy night on Vauxhall Road, Daisy was there for her sister. After a few months, she encouraged Evelyn to take a refresher course at Catherine Gibbs, using some of the insurance money she'd collected when Mel died.
"Get a job," Daisy told her. "You'll feel better."
But jobs were scarce. The insurance agent was sorry he had to let Daisy go, but the depression was taking its toll, as if she didn't know. She learned to drive her father's old car, which had been sitting in the garage since her father's death. The mechanic down the street got it running in exchange for a few bags of groceries. She heard about a dental practice in Elizabeth looking for an assistant. She was interviewed by the dentist and his wife. They hired her on the spot. They hoped things would improve soon, and when they did, they'd promised her a raise. After 10 years working for Dr. O, he'd asked out of the blue,
"I don't mean to pry, Daisy, but how is it a beautiful, accomplished woman like you has never married?"
She'd burst into tears, surprising herself and Dr. O.
"There, there,"
he'd said, holding her, patting her back the way her father might have. She felt so safe with him, trusted him so completely. She told him about Gerald Dupree and her condition. He took a minute to respond.
Would you like me to set up an appointment with a specialist for you?
Yes, she said, surprising herself again. I would. The specialist confirmed the first doctor's findings. He gave a name to her condition, though she would never use it. She asked Dr. Oh to tell no one, not even his wife.
You don't have to worry, he said. You are an extraordinary person, Daisy, among the finest I've ever known. I consider myself lucky to have you in my life.
The feelings are mutual, Dr. Oh. She'd thought after that day they'd have no secrets from each other. Part 4. May to August, 1952. Elizabeth Daily Post. Commercial Jet Flights Begin. By Henry Ammerman. May 3rd. While Elizabeth awaits the CAB verdict on the reopening of Newark Airport, a new era of airplane travel began today with the flight of a British de Havilland Comet jet airliner from London to Johannesburg, South Africa. The British Overseas Airways Corporation plane carried a full payload of 36 passengers on this first-ever commercial jet trip. The journey was expected to take 24 hours, with intermediate stops in Rome, Beirut, Khartoum, Uganda, and northern Rhodesia. With a top cruising speed of 480 miles per hour, the Comet is 50% faster than propeller aircraft such as the DC-6, and its proponents say it provides smoother and quieter travel. Chapter 32. Miri. On May 8th, news spread that another plane had crashed in Elizabeth, smashing into Levy Brothers' department store. Miri was eating lunch at her usual table in the cafeteria when she heard. She felt sick to her stomach and had to swallow again and again to keep down the egg salad sandwich she'd just finished. She thought of the lady who worked in the teen department at Levy Brothers, the one who was having her nails done the morning Mr. Roman gave Miri her Elizabeth Taylor haircut. Had she been at work today? Was she dead now? The teacher, who was lunch monitor that week, shouted, "Everyone under the tables! Now!" She was one of the new young teachers. She wore small pearl earrings that gave her face a glow. But now she wasn't glowing. She shouted, "Quiet, please! Another plane may be on the way! Cover your heads with your hands!" Kids were screaming. Someone vomited on the floor. The smell of sweat mixed with the vomit and the uneaten lunches. They had grown complacent, Miri thought, more interested in ninth grade graduation and going off to high school than about planes crashing. They'd been moving on with their lives, which is what their parents urged them to do. They were trying to be regular kids, happy kids, to please their families. But this proved you never knew when something terrible would happen. Miri wished she could be with Mason. If she was going to die, she wanted to die in his arms. Oh, God, please let him be all right. She and Suzanne held on to each other under the table. Some girls were whimpering. For once, the boys shut up. Miri could smell her own sweat, the sweat of fear, the sweat that deodorant didn't prevent. Robo was probably so glad she'd moved away from Elizabeth. But not everyone could afford to buy a house in Milburn or South Orange or some other fancy town where planes didn't crash. Suzanne's eyes were tightly shut. Her lips moved silently. Probably she was praying. But praying wouldn't save them, would it? It didn't save the people on the planes. Not that Miri knew if they'd prayed, but she was betting they had. Was Suzanne praying to Jesus? Did it matter who you prayed to? Did anything matter? It seemed like they were under the lunch tables for hours. Finally, an all-clear whistle blew. As they came out, they saw Donnie Kellen, that idiot, standing on a table, shouting into a bullhorn, "April Fool! April Fool, everybody!" "It's May, you asshole!" Charlie Kaminsky yelled, throwing his half-finished plate of spaghetti and meatballs at Donnie. That's when all hell broke loose. Kids rushed at Donnie while he danced around on the table, trying to avoid the food being hurled at him like bullets. Half-eaten sandwiches from home, the daily special from the cafeteria, apples, oranges, candy bars. Miri pitched her milk carton at him and clipped the side of his head.
Ow! He yelled. Stop! Come on! It was just a joke! Can't you take a joke?
A group of boys pulled him down from the table and started pummeling him. Was he evil or just stupid? And why should they believe him when he said it was just a joke? He wasn't someone you could trust. The young teacher couldn't begin to control the madness.
People, please! People!
But her pleas didn't stop them. She sent Eleanor to the office to get help. Minutes later, the principal's voice came over the loudspeaker, telling them it was a hoax.
Boys and girls,
Mr. Royer said. Just the sound of his voice was enough to infuriate Miri.
There is no danger. There was no plane crash. Return to your tables immediately and give your attention to Miss Jensen.
None of them liked Edith Jensen, the vice principal. She probably didn't like them either. She marched into the cafeteria, grabbed Donnie Kellen by the arm, and demanded that he apologize.
Apologize to your classmates right now. But I didn't do anything. Apologize. I'm sorry,
Donnie Kellen said.
I thought...
That's the problem, Miss Jensen said. You didn't think. You never think.
You probably haven't had a lucid thought in your life.
And she dragged him out of the cafeteria. Maybe Mr. Royer had already called the police. Maybe Donnie Kellen would be taken away to jail or juvenile detention. Miri was sure at the very least he'd be expelled. Finally, Mr. Royer could expel someone who deserved it. That afternoon, kids walked out of school without going to class, without waiting for bells or for teachers to dismiss them. They took off alone or in groups. Some of the girls flirted with the boys, who flirted back by knocking their books out of their hands or snapping jackets at them. Suzanne wanted to go to Pamel's, the sweet shop on Broad Street, and celebrate with a banana split. But Miri wasn't in the mood to celebrate. It still felt all too real to her. It could have been another plane. It could have been anything. Was this how it was going to be? Always waiting for the next disaster? She walked home alone, forgetting that Irene had gone to New York for the day with Ben Sapphire. She would have welcomed Irene's warm embrace. Instead, she headed upstairs to her room, where she would lie on her bed with the kaleidoscope, losing herself in its beautiful patterns and colors. Upstairs, something felt wrong. Rusty's bedroom door was closed, and it sounded as if she was sick. Rusty had never missed a day of work in her life, but now she was mewling.
Mom!
Miri opened the door to Rusty's room and wasn't sure at first what she was seeing. Rusty looked over the shoulder of whoever was on top of her.
Oh, my God, Miri!
Miri couldn't breathe, let alone speak. A man, naked, with a white backside, turned to look at her, and Miri let out one cry, then covered her mouth with her hand and ran down the stairs, out of the house, up the street. That was Dr. O on top of her mother, and he wasn't checking her teeth. Then Rusty was running after her, a raincoat thrown over a black lace negligee.
Miri, wait!
Miri turned for a minute, in time to see Rusty trip over the negligee, too long for her raincoat to cover, her bare feet in her weekend moccasins. Miri didn't want anyone to see her mother this way, didn't want the neighbors to gossip and ask each other what Rusty Ammerman was doing home in the middle of the day, wearing a black lace negligee and chasing her daughter down Sayre Street toward Morris Avenue. Miri stopped, letting Rusty catch up with her.
You look ridiculous, Miri told her.
I guess so, Rusty said. Go home, Mom. Not unless you come with me. Rusty tried to put her arm around Miri, but Miri backed away, repelled. Don't touch me.
Dr. O was gone when they got home.
I'm sorry this is the way you found out, Rusty said, wrapping the raincoat around her middle and tying the belt. We were waiting until the divorce to tell you.
What divorce?
Arthur and Corinne's.
They can't get divorced. That will make Natalie sicker than she is now.
Natalie knows, Rusty said.
You told her, but not me?
She doesn't know about her father and me. She only knows they're separating.
I'll never forgive you for this, and I'll never trust you again, either.
Honey,
don't honey me, and don't act like everything's going to be okay, because it's not.
I know this is a shock. I wish I could have told you sooner. I don't expect you to understand right away, but I hope.
What happened to honesty is the best policy? What happened to trust? All those things you told me when you accused me of betraying you. You probably lied about my father, too.
I never lied to you about your father, and I'm not lying to you now.
Did you tell him you were pregnant? Did he leave because of that?
How did this turn into a fight about Mike Monsky?
Rusty sat down.
He enlisted before I knew. Later, Irene wanted to tell his family, but I wouldn't let her.
So that's how it was.
I didn't want to marry him, Mary. It never would have worked. And by then, he'd shipped out anyway.
Does Nana know about Dr. O? Does Uncle Henry?
No one knows. We've tried to be discreet to avoid hurting anyone we love.
Is this why Corinne and Dr. O have been fighting?
I can't answer questions about their marriage.
He gave Corinne diamond earrings for Hanukkah. Did you know that?
No.
Well, he did.
I don't need diamond earrings to prove he loves me.
Natalie phoned Miri the following night. I need to see you. Come to the house tomorrow, right after school.
The house?
Your home? No questions. But what about...
Natalie didn't wait for her to finish.
Just don't be late.
Miri rode her bike to Natalie's right after school. She was relieved Corinne's car wasn't in the driveway. She didn't see how she could face Corinne.
Natalie was waiting at the door and rushed Miri up to her bedroom, closed the door behind them, and blocked it with a chair.
Miri was surprised and uncomfortable. Should she be afraid? She didn't know.
How long have you been home? She asked.
Since Lulu died.
Lulu died? That's terrible.
Terrible things happen, in case you didn't already know.
But it's so sad.
A lot of things are sad.
Are you going back to Watchung Hills?
Not if I can help it. Sit down and stop asking questions. I have a couple of things I want to tell you.
Miri wasn't used to Natalie bossing her around, but she did as she was told, sitting on the edge of the twin bed, the one she used to sleep in almost every weekend, the one she thought of as hers.
Natalie sat on her own bed, facing Miri.
One, you can stop this from happening, and if you don't, I'll never speak to you again.
Stop what?
Don't go all naive on me.
I thought you didn't know.
Well, now I do. And you have to stop my father from marrying your mother and ruining my life, my little sister's life, and my mother's life.
How am I supposed to do that? They're grown-ups. They do what they want.
Tell your mother she has to decide between you and my father.
Miri shook her head. She didn't think she could do that. Suppose she came out the loser.
Two, refuse to go to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas? What are you talking about?
Don't tell me you don't know. They're going to Las Vegas together at the end of the school year, and you're going with them.
No, I'm not.
If you don't stop them, you are. You're going to Las Vegas, and you'll never see me or your boyfriend again.
Stop!
Tell your mother to stop, not me. And just so you know, my father begged my mother to go with him. He was practically on his knees begging her to go. He promised Fern and me our own horses. But she said no. So my father found someone else to go with him. Your mother.
Why should I believe you?
I really don't care who you believe. I'm just telling you what's going on. And here's something else you should know.
My mother's at her lawyer's office right now. She's going to take my father to the cleaners if they get divorced. There won't be anything left for your mother or you. I hope you'll be happy living on spaghetti.
Miri liked spaghetti, but she wasn't getting into that now.
I hate them, Natalie shouted, pressing the sides of her head with her hands as if she were in agony. I hate my father, your mother, and I hate you.
What did I do?
You found them.
Who told you that?
My father came clean. He told my mother everything last night, and she told me. She says your mother is no better than a whore.
A whore? Her once-upon-a-time best friend was calling her mother a whore? Miri got a sharp pain in her chest. Maybe she was going to die, just like Lulu.
What's wrong with you? Natalie said. You're turning purple. You can't scare me if that's what you're trying to do.
Natalie grabbed her by the shoulders and shook, then slapped her across the face, which got her breathing again. Miri jumped up. She had to get out of there, had to get fresh air into her lungs. She knocked over the chair blocking Natalie's door, flung the door open, and fled down the stairs, shouting at Natalie, who was right behind her.
Never say that about my mother again. You hear me? Never!
Then she was out the kitchen door and onto her bicycle. Natalie followed her, screaming.
You know what they do in Las Vegas? They drop A-bombs in the desert. That's what they do for fun.
Miri's fantasy was coming true, but not the way it was supposed to. Corinne was supposed to meet her demise quickly, painlessly. She and Natalie were supposed to be sisters. They were supposed to be one big, happy family, living in the red brick house on Shelley Avenue, not in some godforsaken place called Las Vegas, where they drop A-bombs for fun. Christina. She waited until Sunday dinner, when they were all together around the dining room table, her parents, her grandparents, Athena and her husband Thad, who hardly ever spoke at family gatherings, and their toddler, Alex, who was playing under the table. She waited until the lamb, the eggplant, and the salad courses had been cleared from the table. Then, as her mother passed around little dessert cakes, Christina said,
Mama, Baba, you know I love you.
She'd been practicing in her room. She hoped it wasn't a mistake to bring this up in front of the whole family, but she wanted to get it over with all at once, and she figured her parents would be less likely to go cuckoo in front of her grandparents and little Alex. She had their attention now. Mama and Baba looked from one to the other.
I've got an opportunity, she continued, a wonderful job opportunity with Dr. Osner in another place.
What place?
Her mother asked. Las Vegas, she said.
Las Vegas?
Her mother repeated this twice, then asked,
Where is Las Vegas?
Athena said,
You don't mean Las Vegas, Nevada. You're not telling Mama and Baba you're moving to Las Vegas, Nevada.
She had hoped Athena would keep her mouth shut for once. She should have known better.
How far is this place?
Mama asked.
Almost as far as California, Athena said,
holding her pregnant belly. She'd already gained close to 40 pounds. Her maternity dress was snug across her middle. Mama clutched her chest.
Nico, she said to Baba, do something.
I'm not moving there. Christina tried to reassure them. Think of it as college. 2 years of college, but it won't cost you anything. Instead, I'll be getting paid, and I'll come home for the holidays.
Baba said,
That Irish boy, he's going too?
Now Mama screamed,
No!
She banged her fist on the table, hard enough to make the glasses and the silverware jump. Alex climbed onto Thad's lap and wrapped his fat little arms around his father's neck.
You're breaking their hearts, Christina,
Athena said. You don't understand, Christina said to her parents. Jack is 1A. He could be called up at any time. You know what that means? He could be sent to Korea. Would you be happy then?
Thad got up from the table and carried Alex, who had begun to whimper, out of the room. Athena glared at Christina.
You have a way of ruining everything, even Sunday dinner. You do this,
and I'm the one who's going to have to pick up the pieces around here. It will all fall on my shoulders. You are the most selfish person I've ever known." The grandparents began jabbering to one another in Greek. Baba said,
"Girls, you are sisters. Stop this fighting."
But Athena didn't stop. Her face heated up. "As if I don't already have too many fish to fry, between the store and Alex and the baby I'm about to have and a husband." Before Athena could finish, she cried out, "Oh!" Then, "Oh!" again.
"What is it?"
Mama asked. "I think my water broke. I think I'm in labor. Somebody get Thad. Somebody get my bag." Everyone jumped up from the table at once. Everyone except Christina and her grandmother. Yaya moved next to her and rested her hand on Christina's. Christina put her head on the table and cried. She hadn't even told them her biggest news. She didn't see how she'd ever be able to tell them now. Miri. Rusty and Dr. O wanted to take her out to dinner, but Miri refused. She was not going to be seen with the two of them in public. "All right," Rusty said. "We'll eat here."
"Does he know you can't cook?"
Rusty smiled.
"If you can read, you can cook."
"Are you quitting your job?"
"Not yet."
"When?"
Rusty shook her head.
"Would you like pizza or deli?"
"Pizza from Spirito's. No sausage. Will Nana and Uncle Henry be eating with us?"
"No."
"Do they know?"
"Not everything. Not yet.
We wanted to talk to you first."
"This sounds like fun."
"Sarcasm doesn't become you, Miri."
"Well, sorry about that, Mom."
"Look, I know how you feel."
"No, you don't know."
Rusty gave up.
"Okay, fine. Pizza from Spirito's, tonight, 6:30.
Miri turned and walked out the door.
"Miri, I'll be late for school."
"It's not even 7:20, Rusty said.
"Don't you have a train to catch, Mom?"
She would have to tell Mason about this. They had no secrets from each other. But what could she say? That she'd found her mother and Dr. O doing it? That Dr. O and Corinne were getting divorced? These were her thoughts as she walked home from school that afternoon. She never expected to run into Mason, standing in front of a small apartment house on Cherry Street. They hadn't planned to meet. Fred was staying with a friend, so she didn't need to drop him at the Steins today. She ran toward Mason, taking him by surprise, dropping her books to the ground and throwing her arms around him.
"I'm so glad to see you."
"Whoa,"
he said. "I have something to tell you," she said.
"I have something to tell you, too," he said.
"You go first," she said.
"Okay. The good news is, I'm going, too."
"Wait, going where?"
"Las Vegas. Isn't that what you wanted to tell me?"
"What do you mean, you're going to Las Vegas?"
"Jack's been talking it up. He says I can finish high school there, then come to work for him. He's going to teach me to be an electrician."
"Jack is going to Las Vegas?"
"Yeah, with Christina. Daisy's going, too. They're going to work for Dr. O in his new office."
"What else do you know?"
Her mouth felt dried out. Her skin felt clammy.
"If you mean about your mom and Dr. O, yeah, I know about that, too."
"Does everyone know?"
She steadied herself against a tree.
"Only the important people."
Was he making a joke? He looked at her.
"Why aren't you happy?"
Why wasn't she happy? She should be happy, shouldn't she?
"I didn't want to leave you," she said. "I didn't want to go."
"So now you won't have to leave me because I'm going too."
He hugged her. She didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Irene was right. Some things were beshert, meant to be. Out of all the places in the world, she and Mason were going to wind up in Las Vegas together. She started to laugh.
"But are you sure Jack is going?"
"Everything depends on Dr. O. If he goes, then Christina is going. And if Christina goes, Jack will go. And if Jack goes..."
He lifted her off the ground and swung her around. Then he turned serious.
"So long as Jack doesn't get called up. He says if he does, He could try to claim me as a dependent, but he's not sure if that'll work or not. Christina wants him to try. We'd have to go to court.
You mean Jack might have to go to Korea? Mason nodded.
He's 1A.
But Eisenhower says if he's elected, he'll end the war.
That's only if he wins. We don't even know if he's running yet. The election's not until November. He's not sworn in until January. And it could be somebody else. Joey Paul says it could be Adlai Stevenson.
Joey Paul?
The guy from the bowling alley. Joey Politics. He says Stevenson's an egghead. Who knows what he'd do?
Uncle Henry says Stevenson is brilliant.
Don't take this wrong, but your family leans to the left.
Are you calling my family communists?
Nothing like that. They're the best family I know.
Then please take that back, about leaning to the left.
Okay, I take it back.
They were interrupted by a little boy who ran at Mason, grabbing hold of his leg.
Come see new house.
I will, Mason told him. Later.
No, now!
Later, Stosh, okay?
The door to the apartment house opened, and Polina came out, holding Fred on a leash.
Sorry, so late, she told Mason.
Her lipstick was bright red, and her dress didn't leave much to the imagination, as if she were trying to look like Marilyn Monroe on the recent cover of Life magazine, beauty mark and all, one she didn't have when she was making pancakes for the kids at Janet.
We are very happy here, Polina said. A beautiful place.
You should thank Miri, Mason said. It's because of her you got the apartment.
Mr. Ben's granddaughter? Polina asked. I'm not exactly his granddaughter.
But close to it, Mason said.
Thank you, and thank Mr. Ben, she said to Miri,
right before she threw her arms around Mason.
Oh, this wonderful boy. I don't want to lose. I'll miss too much. Maybe we should go, too. What do you think, Stash? Should we go with Mason far away?
She knew, too. Stash said,
No, Mama, I like it here.
He loves new apartment, but I love this handsome boy.
She squished those big breasts against Mason and was headed for a kiss on his mouth. But Mason turned his head at the last minute, and the kiss landed on the side of his face, leaving a big red lipstick splotch. Mason untangled himself, never taking his eyes off Miri, as if to say, It's not my fault. I don't know what's going on here. Don't blame me. For a minute, Miri's eyes questioned him, while Polina went on and on.
This wonderful, strong, brave boy.
Polina must have noticed the look on Miri's face, because she said,
Oh, no. Mason, you have girlfriend and you didn't tell me?
She pretend slapped the side of her head and tried to laugh, not a genuine laugh, a nervous laugh.
I love him like mother,
she told Miri, recognizing her mistake. She could probably get fired for having a thing with one of the boys at Janet.
You understand? Like mother loves son.
Miri never saw a mother kiss her son that way.
I hope my Stash grows up strong and brave like Mason.
Miri didn't say anything. She and Mason just looked at each other, while Polina dug herself in deeper. Stosh tugged on Mason's arm.
Come for sleepover so we can play. Mama has big new bed. I have new bed.
Come for sleepover. Mama has big new bed. Miri felt the panic rising, her heart pounding, the urge to run too strong to resist. She took off, running for her life, leaving her books behind, leaving everything behind.
Miri, wait!
Mason chased after her.
It's not what you think.
She stopped abruptly and faced him. This boy she loved, totally, absolutely. This boy she'd trusted with all her heart, with all her soul. She was crying now. She couldn't stop. And she didn't care. She swiped her hand across her nose.
She's the friend I was telling you about. Mason said,
breathless from running after her.
She cooks at Janet.
I know who she is.
That kiss, it didn't mean anything. That's just the way she is. That's how it was in Poland when she was growing up.
They kiss everyone on the lips. It has nothing to do with us.
Really? That's what you expect me to believe?
He waited too long to answer.
I never meant to hurt you. Why would I hurt you? You're the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Stop! No more lies!
Miri, please, listen. I wanted to tell you, but I didn't know how. I tried to end it, and now it's over. I promise, it's over.
I never want to see you again.
Miri, don't do this.
He reached out to grab her, but she was faster. She stopped only once before she got home, to see if he was following. But he wasn't. Mason. He couldn't stand the idea of losing her. And losing her because of what, some stupid kiss he didn't even want? Damn. He'd screwed up. He'd screwed up big time. He should have told Polina he had a girlfriend a long time ago. Lately, Polina expected too much of him. She expected him to be the man of the family. She wanted him to quit school and get a job and move in and be a dad to Stash. But he wasn't ready for that. In another month, he'd be 17. He'd be able to get his license. He had enough saved for a used car. He just wanted to be a 17-year-old guy with a girlfriend, a dog, and a car. And he wanted to get out of here, away from Polina. He wanted to go to Las Vegas with his brother, who would teach him not only to be an electrician, but a man. Sure, it was exciting to be with her at first. It was like a fantasy. This grown woman who knew what she wanted and wasn't shy about showing him. At first, she made no demands. But now she wouldn't leave him alone.
Stashi misses you. I have big new bed just waiting. You come fill me up. I need you fill me up, Mason.
And what guy wouldn't want to fill her up? That was the problem. But he was done with her. Finished. Kaput. Christina bumped into Zach Galanos in the hall at school. What was the sewing machine man's son doing at Batten? She tried not to look at him, but too late. He did a double take.
I know you, don't I?
He asked. You went to school with my sister, Athena.
Right, Athena Demetrius. And you're the little sister.
Not so little. I'm a senior, graduating in less than a month.
And your name is...
Christina.
Right, Christina.
He smiled at her. She didn't like this. It felt awkward.
What are you doing here?
She asked.
I have an interview for a teaching position for next year.
Why on earth would he want to teach at the school, right across the street from where his parents died, from the hole in the ground that was once his house?
What will you teach?
History, maybe a few classes of civics. Mrs. Rinaldi is leaving.
I didn't know that.
She wants to move someplace that's sunny year-round.
Who doesn't? She shouldn't have said that, given the fact that he was here looking for a job. A job in Elizabeth, New Jersey. A job in Plane Crash City.
What about you, Christina? Are you going someplace sunny after graduation?
I'm thinking about it.
Can I call you this summer? Would you go out with me?
This was so embarrassing. And the second bell was ringing. She was going to be late for class.
I have a boyfriend.
Serious?
Yes, she said. Her voice so soft, he had to lean in to hear her. What would he say if she told him she was married? My sister just had her second baby, another boy. They named him Ajax, like the cleanser. They're going to call him AJ. I'll bet she tries for a girl next year.
Send her my regards, and to your parents, too. They were very kind after the accident.
The accident? As if they'd fallen down the stairs. I saw it, you know. I was helping Mr. Durkee after school when the airplane... when it came right at us. We thought it was coming through the window of the classroom.
I didn't know that.
And after, I was there when the fires and the explosion... She felt dizzy. She needed to put her head down. She dropped the book she was holding, and as she fell forward, he caught her, held her in his arms.
It must have been terrible to see that.
Yes. But no one she loved died. She reminded herself to breathe. Breathe deeply, like when the doctor inserted the speculum. When she recovered, she said, "I'm late for class." She collected her books and started off down the hall. He caught up to her.
"Listen, in case you need someone to talk to, here's my number."
He passed her a piece of paper. She looked at it and nodded. Miri. Henry found Miri, limp and exhausted, on the steps outside their house. She had no idea how long she'd been there, only that she was cried out, her chest so heavy she thought she might never get up. Some boys she didn't know had come by on a bike and dumped her books on the front lawn, but she made no move to get them. When Henry pulled up and got out of the car, she fell into his arms.
"I know. I know."
He held her. But he didn't know. He couldn't know.
"Come on," he said. "Get in."
He opened the car door for her, and she got inside.
"Where are we going?"
she asked, as he started up the car and pulled away.
"How about down the shore? How does that sound?"
She loved the shore, and he knew it. He drove for an hour and a half, stopping once at a phone booth to call Irene to tell her where they were, and not to wait for them for supper. When they got to Bradley Beach, they took off their shoes and socks, leaving them under the boardwalk, while they walked along the shore, letting the waves drizzle out across their bare feet. Rusty called the smell of the sea, the salty air, the ultimate cure for whatever ails you. But Miri didn't think it could wash away her sadness today, even if she jumped in, fully dressed.
"You want to talk about it?"
Henry asked. "I hate secrets," Miri said.
"I don't blame you."
"Did you know?" she asked.
"About Rusty and Dr. O?"
Miri nodded.
"No one knew."
"Until I found them, you mean?"
"I think they wanted to be found, not by you, not the way it happened, but they wanted it known. Otherwise, they'd never have been at home that day."
"Natalie called Rusty a whore."
"Poor Natalie. If she feels that to defend her mother, she has to badmouth Rusty. Someday she'll grow up and figure it out for herself."
"Figure what out?"
"There are two sides to every story."
"Always?"
"Almost always."
Henry took her hand.
"Rusty deserves to be happy," he said. "And so does Arthur. He's a good man, Miri."
As if she didn't know. As if she hadn't dreamed of having a father just like him. How can a good man leave his wife and children?
"We don't know about his marriage, Miri. We don't even know that he is leaving his children."
"Do you mean the children might go with him?" That would change everything, and not for the better, now that Natalie hated her. She was glad Steve would be going away to college. She didn't want to live in the same house with him. He barely acknowledged her existence. And Fern? Fern was a nudge, but Miri wouldn't mind her that much. They could get a babysitter for her, maybe another Mrs. Barnes.
"You're asking questions only Rusty and Arthur can answer," Henry said. "I'm sure they're going to sit down with you and explain everything."
"Oh, no."
"What?"
"Tonight, 6:30, pizza from Spirito's. I forgot."
He checked his watch.
"You're already late. You should call."
"Would you do it for me?"
"It would be better if you did it yourself."
She called from a phone booth along the boardwalk, feeding coins into the box as fast as Henry handed them to her. When Rusty answered, Miri said,
"It's me. I forgot."
"We'll do it tomorrow," Rusty said. "No excuses."
"Okay, tomorrow."
She didn't tell Henry until after they'd stopped at the hotel where the wedding would be, until after he'd shown her the garden where the chuppah would be draped with Grandpa Max's talis and a white lace tablecloth brought from the old country by Leah's grandmother. Everything else would be decorated with peonies, Leah's favorite flower, in shades ranging from pale blush to deep pink. She didn't tell him until he asked,
"Would you like to bring Mason to the wedding? I know we didn't send him a proper invitation, but..."
"We broke up,"
she managed to say, holding back tears. If only she could have a do-over, she'd take a different route home from school, or she'd have gone to Pamela's with her girlfriends, or maybe to the library. Then she wouldn't have run into him, or seen Polina and Stash.
You broke up? Henry said. I'm so sorry.
She leaned against him and nestled her head against his chest. He has another girlfriend. All this time, he's had another girlfriend.
Henry shook his head. I can't believe this. Are you sure?
She cooks at Janet. She has a little boy. He says he tried to end it with her.
But you don't believe him?
She shrugged. Do you?
I don't know Mason as well as you.
Would you ever lie like that to Leah?
Never.
I don't see how he could have lied to me.
Maybe he didn't know how to tell you. He's still a boy, Miri. He has a lot of stuff to figure out.
I told him I never want to see him again.
That's a strong message.
I mean it. Was this her punishment for her fantasy about Dr. O marrying her mother? To lose her boyfriend? The best boyfriend any girl could have? No wonder he'd never tried to get beyond first base with her. All the time he was doing it with Polina. How could she, a 15-year-old girl, compete with that? I don't know how I can keep going, she told Henry.
Miri, sweetheart, life is hard, Henry said, but it's worth the struggle.
Are you sure?
Very, very sure.
I broke up with Mason, she told Rusty that night, and I don't want to talk about it. Oh, honey, Rusty said, I'm so sorry. Is it about Las Vegas? I said I don't want to talk about it, and no, it's not about Las Vegas. End of conversation. Let Rusty tell Irene. Let Rusty tell the whole world. Henry. Leah said Miri would learn from this experience. She said it wasn't realistic of them to think puppy love could last. But learn what? Not to trust? Not to believe? Not to love? He didn't agree with Leah. He wished he could make Miri's sadness go away. But there was nothing he could do except be there for her. Christina. Jack was beside himself. They were in his room at Mrs. O'Malley's. He paced up and down, punching his fist into his open hand, while she sat primly on the edge of the bed.
And now Mason won't come to Las Vegas because of that little bitch.
Do you know why Miri broke up with him? Christina asked.
No. Do you?
Because he lied to her. Because he's been... She tried to put it delicately. He's been sleeping with Polina, the girl who cooks at Janet, the one Daisy took in after she lost everything in the Williamson Street crash.
Mason?
Yes, Mason. Polina told Daisy, and Daisy told me. She thought I should know because of our closeness.
My little brother?
Yes, your little brother. Polina said Mason broke up with her right after Miri found out he was cheating.
This is crazy. We're talking about kids.
Polina's not a kid, but she has one.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. How do we know this is really true?
Why would Daisy lie to me? She's not a gossip. But you should ask Mason yourself.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I wish you'd stop saying that.
What should I say?
I'm sorry, Jack. Christina softened. It must be hard for you to hear this.
What's hard is that he thinks he can't confide in me, that he thinks he can't come with us.
Give him time. Let him cool off. I'll bet you anything he'll change his mind. If not right away, then as soon as he finishes high school.
But that's another year. Who's going to be around to watch over him, make sure he's okay until then?
Any boy who can run into a burning plane, not once, not twice, but how many times?
I lost count,
Jack said. Well, any boy who can keep his head straight through all of that is going to be okay.
But you can't be sure, can you?
If you want to stay...
I didn't say that.
Because if you don't want to leave him...
I didn't say that either.
All I mean is, I'd understand. and my parents would be over the moon.
Until you tell them about us.
Jack took a couple of practice swings with an imaginary baseball bat.
When are you going to tell them, Mrs. McKittrick?
When the time is right. Fortunately, he didn't question her about when that would be, because she hadn't the faintest idea. Are we having our first fight? She asked.
We're never going to fight.
He fell back on the bed and took her in his arms. Miri found out from Dr. O that Mason refused to go to Las Vegas with Christina and Jack. He's not going because I'm going, she thought. Well, guess what? She'd decided to stay home with Irene and Henry. Henry and Leah could have Rusty's upstairs apartment, and she'd move in with Irene, downstairs. So Mason could go with Jack, and she'd never have to see him again. Until Henry broke the news that he'd accepted a job with the Washington Post, and he and Leah were moving to D.C. after the wedding. Just like that. He promised that when she visited, he'd take her to see the White House and all the other sites. Okay, then she'd stay with Irene, and Ben could move in upstairs. When she announced her plan, Rusty said, But Irene and Ben are coming with us. I don't believe you! Miri ran downstairs to find Irene. Irene said,
I should let my girls go without me? Are you crazy? Never!
Ben said,
There's plenty of real estate opportunities in Las Vegas. Not that I need the money, but I like the idea.
Later, at the twice-postponed pizza supper, once because of Miri, once because Dr. O couldn't make it, Dr. O said,
I can promise you this, Mirabelle. I'll love your mother and take care of her, and you, as long as I live, and I'll never give either one of you a bum steer.
What about Natalie? Would you give her a bum steer? Miri, Rusty warned.
It's okay,
Dr. O said to Rusty.
Mirabelle doesn't trust me yet, but I'm hoping, in time, I'll earn it.
Stop calling me that, she said to Dr. O. He looked hurt.
What would you like me to call you?
Miri.
Okay,
Dr. O said.
From now on, it's Miri.
Rusty came to her room and knocked on the door before she opened it. I wish it could have been different, she said. I know people are saying I stole him away from Corinne, but I didn't. You have to believe that, honey. Please. Did you fall in love in an instant, like a flash of lightning? I wouldn't describe it that way. I was volunteering with the Red Cross. I'd bring him coffee and Danish at the morgue, Rusty said. Sometimes, late at night. He needed to talk, to unwind. It was gruesome work, identifying burned and broken bodies. I don't want to hear about that. Okay. And I don't want to hear about the other stuff either. I understand. But you should know that when Natalie got sick, we decided to end it before it had even begun. So then, what? You changed your minds? Staying apart didn't work out. Miri could have laughed, but she didn't. Rusty tried to give her a hug. Miri stood stiffly at first, then relented. She knew she had the power to refuse, but she was losing her will. It's going to be a great adventure, Rusty whispered. Miri never thought about her mother being adventurous. If she was so adventurous, how come she never went anywhere or did anything except get up and go to work every day, 5 days a week, and on weekends, clean the house and do the laundry. When Miri put that to her, Rusty said, Because I took my responsibilities seriously. I still do. Would you marry him if he were staying in Elizabeth? Would that be enough of an adventure for you? I love him, Miri. Our lives together will be all the adventure I need. I'd stand by his side no matter what. That was a powerful message for Miri. She loved Mason, but she wasn't standing by his side no matter what. And neither would Rusty, she bet, if the no matter what was Polina, or someone like Polina, if the no matter what was a pack of lies. Would you have gone without me?
Miri asked. That was really all she wanted to know. I could never leave you, Miri.